Here in America, work is in trouble. We've offshored our manufacturing, sent away good jobs, and lost so much ability to make things. American Giant is a company that's pushing back against this tide. They make high-quality clothing, sweatshirts, jeans, dresses, jackets, and so much more, right here in the USA. Visit American-Giant.com and get 20% off your first order when you use code STAPLE20 at checkout. That's 20% off your first order at American-Giant.com, promo code STAPLE20.
Hello, everybody. Welcome back to the Nomad Dogs podcast. This is one we haven't had in a while. This is a retired greyhound, and they have a frustrated dog that they're struggling with the relationship. So the mom in the relationship is getting growled at, lunged at, snapped at. They have some leash reactivity. So this is fulfillment, right? So how do we fulfill a dog? How do we reset a relationship with a dog and start to really change and shift the relationship for the better? How do we take over the steering wheel if another dog is driving? How do we fulfill a dog that needs fulfillment if we live in a situation or an environment that we can't meet, such as a city or something? So this is a good podcast, just lots of good information in here on that. I appreciate you guys listening. As always, at the end of the podcast, I'm going to be answering three of your dog training questions. So if you're a listener and you have a specific question for me about your dog or maybe a client's dog, head over to the iTunes review chart and leave a review within the testimonial. Leave your question in the review. There we go. And I'll answer it next podcast. So enjoy the podcast, you guys. Thank you so much for listening. I appreciate you a lot. My Borble puppy is now 10 weeks and it's been fun. So hopefully you guys are catching up to that on my YouTube and on my Instagram stories, but it's been fun. I'll do another podcast maybe next week on where we're at, but we'll talk to you guys at the end of the podcast.
Thank you so much. So the culprit in question has decided to stand next to my husband.
Cool.
Looking very innocent.
He's a good boy.
Yeah, we'll discuss it. So anyway, let me turn it this way so maybe we can. Is that okay?
Yeah.
Okay. So thank you so much. So we actually found you because we reached out to, who's that great trainer in England that we follow?
Will?
I just blanked up.
Anyway, there's a trainer in England that has a lot of good YouTube training videos, and we reached out to see if he would do a Zoom consult, and he said no, but he said you were the only trainer in the U.S. that he would recommend. I'm totally blanking on his name. He's the guy with the big beard.
Will.
Yeah. So we adopted Sullivan like 9 months ago. He's a retired racing greyhound, and I think the main reason we're contacting you is my anxiety with the dog. So I think I'm probably the one that you need to advise versus us doing something different with the dog. He raced a long time. He raced 87 races. And so he kind of had that life of a greyhound. And then the family kept him, and they had a lot of dogs on the farm, and they did lure coursing with him. And then put him up for adoption, and we adopted him about 9 months ago. And we had a greyhound 2 dogs ago, who was really like a totally normal dog. Maybe not what you expect when you get a retired racer. He just fit right in with the family, and we had him until he died of cancer. And then we had a pit bull for 12 and a half years, who was the sweetest dog ever. And Sullivan is he's really, really, really an anxious dog. And I don't know if everything falls under that heading, but he's a very reactive dog. So he has pretty bad separation anxiety. It's not like classic. He's not destructive. He's not peeing or pooping in the house or destroying the door. But we live in a condominium, and he barks and cries pretty much intermittently the entire time that we're gone. And we've tried many things, which we're happy to share with you. I'm just kind of giving you an overview of the issues. So we're dealing with the separation stuff right now. It's really to the point where if we go out because of our neighbors, we actually get a pet sitter to come in and just stay with him because we don't want him barking or crying or disturbing the neighbors. So there's sort of that piece of anxiety. He's also, I think he's reactive rather than aggressive, but we've had many incidents where we did something wrong, and I can tell you some examples of those, and his reaction has been very, very frightening to me. I don't want to show you because I don't want to alarm him, but he really, really, it's more than a growl. He's growling, barking, snapping, the teeth are coming together, and really moving toward whoever he's upset with. He has never bitten. He's never bitten us. He's never bitten anyone. He's reactive also with dogs, but those seem to be like normal corrections. We take him to daycare and the person there is really unperturbed. Like if a dog gets up in his face or jumps at him, he'll growl and that dog will back up immediately. So the daycare person is very unconcerned with him socially with other dogs. She says he's just communicating. But the way he communicates with us is really very, very frightening to me. I'm pretty scared of him. I don't really want to do the wrong thing. So the wrong thing might be that you bump into him when he's on his bed. The wrong thing once was that I was curry combing, brushing him, and maybe I brushed him too hard. If he's not so great on a leash, he's getting better, but he kind of zigs and zags. And if you accidentally sort of trip and bump into him, and again, it's not just like he's turning around saying, don't do that, or like a very light growl. Like he's really, really snapping. And it goes on for, it's more than just stop. It's like, stop, go blank yourself, and I'm going to come kill you. But that's sort of, if he was putting it into words, that's what it feels like to me. He's less reactive with my husband, but you have had incidents with him where he has resource guarded, like if he has a Kong or he has a toy, or my husband bumps into him when he's on his bed.
Well, mostly only when he's sleeping.
Yeah.
It's more with like you, sleep aggression when I haven't seen him.
You had it with a Kong though, and you had it with a chicken foot. Two sure. Really high value things. Again, it's not just that he gives a growl. He's not just warning. So like, I know you don't have a crystal ball, and I want to have you ask me questions or tell you more, but like, I don't want to have a dog that I'm afraid of. And he's a young dog. Like, he's going to be 6 in March. And, you know, obviously we would hope that he would have a long life. So if I'm going to have like 6 years with a dog that I'm afraid of, like, I don't really want to handle him. I don't want to wipe his feet. I don't want to put boots on him in the winter. I'm afraid, like, what if I'm putting his coat on? And, like, you know how you can put it, you can accidentally, like, our pit bull, like, would have been like, what? You know, I'm just afraid I'm going to do something and he's going to have to correct me. If that's, I don't know if you would say he's correcting me, but it really feels like he's treating me like a dog that he has to show, you know, back off, kind of. So that's sort of like an overview. We can tell you more about him or answer questions that you might have.
Sure. So it sounds to me like he was a working dog, and working dogs, you know, when they race. So when you're racing for 6 years or, you know, close to there, it is a very different world than pet ownership, like very different. And you know, I don't race greyhounds, so I don't know every in-depth picture of what it looks like, but I do know that it's much different than a pet home. So I would say that that's probably the biggest reason why these things are happening, is because this dog was treated like a working dog, like a livestock, like, hey, you're here to do one thing and one thing only, and that's it. And that's not bad. It's just, it's not a pet. And so when you take a working dog that, you know, depending on where they live, might sleep outside and not have a lot of human contact other than getting them out, targeting a prey or a race course, and then sending them on their way, that's about it. So that's probably a lot of the reasons why you're seeing this odd behavior in a dog. Like you said, your pit bull is like, you could do anything to, and that's normal for pets, where they're really here to serve us. and we could do anything with them, and they're like, yeah, I just love you, so you could kick me and I'd still love you. Like, they just don't care. They're resilient, right? So I just want to explain a little bit of that to you, just because I think that that's probably the biggest reasoning why these things are happening, is you get this dog that's like just a work, like a piece of equipment. It's what it is. It's like they go out there and they, and to be fair to the breed, that's in my opinion and in my experience, typically what they're happiest doing. Like they don't, like they love racing. That's what they're bred. That's why they're on Earth. So it's not a bad thing that they're doing these things. It's just when they're raised, it's kind of like the old movie Crocodile Dundee, where you take the outback guy and put him in New York City and it's like, what the heck, you know? It's like complete mismatch of environments. So I'll just say that on the front end, that that's probably a lot of the weird behavior from pet owners, to be like, this is weird, I feel afraid, I feel this is unnormal. And it is to pets, but that's part of the process of integrating in a dog that was basically used as a piece of equipment to then, you know, living in a room with comfy beds and a routine that's different from where he was, and not running and not racing and not working. And so I think there's a huge shift. I know you've had him for less than a year, but you've had him for, you know, a good amount of time. So just a couple of things to talk about and think about from a professional standpoint, from what could this crash course look like for this dog, and really looking at the perspective from him, is he had this routine, and these working dogs are very rough around the edges, because they're not really meant to be polite and to be trained. They're meant to go fast. That's it. That's the only thing that they're supposed to do, is go fast. And so that's what I would agree that you're probably seeing the like snarky, snarly, like, hey, don't like, what are you doing? You know? And I would agree that that's how their behavior is. And just in general, dogs, you know, greyhounds or any working dog aside, that's just how dogs communicate. They correct each other. They talk. That's why your daycare person was like, oh yeah, this happens all day in daycare. Cause if anybody who works with dogs like sees that and they're like, yeah, that's just like us hiccuping. It's like, yeah, they hiccup. That's what humans do. Dogs correct each other. So I would agree that that's probably a little bit of what you're seeing, that little snarky kind of short tempered, like, hey, he's almost like, why'd you do that? Like, what are you doing? Like, that's not what we do. Like, humans don't bump into us. Like, so I think it's him also learning like patience of living with people who don't, it's like a movie, right? It's like you get this alien that lives with this new family and it's like, everything doesn't make sense. So I would agree that that's probably what you're seeing, is, you know, again, like, oh, I want to, you know, I just think that the relationship with working dogs is very different than you would find with pets. And I think that that's the first thing to kind of tackle as far as expectations go. So there's that.
Would you think, we were lucky in our first greyhound, because he didn't race long and he was not greyhoundish. He was really like a dog. A lot of people remarked on that. Would you think that this is just kind of who he is, and I have to kind of adjust my expectations? Because it does feel like, you can see he is also loving, like he wants our attention. He, in a kind of needy, anxious way, like he's always very glued to my husband and he just wants to be pet and pet and pet. But it feels like, do you feel like this is just, I know you don't have a crystal ball, but this is just him. Like, this is just who he is. And I have to get used to having a dog that might sometimes snarl and snap at me.
I think I think a little bit of both. I think that's the personality, because when we start looking at personality, it's like, you know, have you done anything to make him feel a certain way or anything like that? So I would say yes. Like, I think, you know, genetics and personality play a role, where you're like, well, where did this come from? This wasn't taught. There's no reason why this happened. Like, I just brought home a new puppy and he's a big protective breed. The day I brought him home, he stood his ground and barked and lunged at my shepherd. I mean, that's just baseline genetics. Like, it's like, nobody taught this puppy how to, well, maybe, but you know, being around other mom and dad. But so my point is, yes, there's definitely baseline genetics of how he could be, but I think you could get things to be better through exercises, which we'll talk about in a moment.
Oh, I think you just froze. Sorry.
That's okay. Can you hear me okay?
Okay, I think you just froze. It's like an exclamation. Oh, there you are. Okay, you're back now.
Okay, cool. So what I was saying is I think it's a little bit of both, yes. I think what we have to do is there's some exercises that we can do to help with the relationship. But I think the expectations have to be realistic, because I find with dog owners in general, we have sometimes unrealistic expectations, and we never really are satisfied or happy because of that. And it's really easy to have, and a lot of unrealistic expectations is just perception of like what we think something is versus what it is. It's like, hey, I really want my dog to get to this point, when it's like, they may never get to that point. So I think it's a little bit of that is like, yeah, it's not going to be like your pit bull. Like pit bulls traditionally are just do whatever you want. As long as you're happy, I'm happy. And I think
it's so ironic because everybody in our building was probably scared of her. And they think Sullivan is like the sweetest thing they've ever. And she hated being hugged. And I would hug her and kiss her and snuggle her. And she'd be like, okay, whatever. And him, I won't put my head near his head. Like one of the times when he went, ah, blah, 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 was like, and my husband hugs him all the time. My head was close to his head. I don't know if my hair bothered him. And he went, and anyway, so I'm just saying, it's just ironic that people think certain things about pit bulls that are so inaccurate.
Yeah. Yeah, it is. I would agree. Pit bulls are some of my favorite breeds. They're incredible. Really, I really like them. So I think it's definitely a little bit of genetics, because it's like when you get it, it's a cross between genetics and personality. So, and they're very closely related. But my point is the dog right now is six. So that means we get a dog at 6 years old and they behave right off the bat a certain way. So if that happens, that means that, okay, that doesn't mean that if it's consistent, that means, okay, this is probably how the dog is. If it's not consistent, it's just like, again, my puppy, this was last week, brought him home, did all this stuff. The next day, didn't see any of it. He was just overwhelmed. So my point is, by saying that, is the evidence has shown over my clients and even just in this past week with my puppy, that if it's consistent with your dog, where the dog is consistently behaving a certain way, we can't say, well, maybe it's just the weather, or maybe it's just, no, it's probably kind of who they are, especially as a mature dog, 6 years old, we get him. He's like this from day one and is consistently like this. That's probably just the personality of the dog. But there's, so now when you say like your husband can do stuff with him and then he doesn't care as much, but then when you do stuff with him, is that pretty consistent where he favors your husband more than you?
I think so. And I think also my husband is a very calm person. So I think when Sullivan escalates, Mark doesn't escalate, but I get really frightened. I'm not a calm person. And so I imagine that he brings his energy and then I'm like reacting also, which doesn't help him. So I think that's a big difference, is he has behaved not as badly with you, but you also don't, Mark just doesn't react. I mean, you don't do nothing, but you don't, like, I am really, really, really scared. Mm-hmm. And he's not that scared. I don't think you're scared at all, in fact.
I haven't worried that he's actually going to bite me. Love that he snarls at me occasionally, but I haven't.
Yeah.
It hasn't translated into me thinking, oh my God, he's going to bite me. But he does kind of look like he wants to.
It really looks like, blank you, I'm going to cut a bee. I mean, it really looks really scary. Mm-hmm. Like, he looks like Cujo from that movie.
Yeah. So a lot of times, yeah, dog behavior for people who aren't around dog behavior oftentimes is very, can be very alarming. And so it looks a lot worse than it is. You know, it seems like, oh my God, we're dead. You know, when we're like, oh, okay, that's what it was. No big deal. So I would agree that your perception is probably what's causing the greater build of what's happening, right? So I think that that's important.
And by the way, with the daycare person who's as calm as you could imagine, like she can have like five giant dogs in her house and she's like, cut it out. And they just all stop right away. She can do anything to him. And she's completely unafraid of him. And she's had zero incidents with him. Like, yeah, actually zero. I mean, she's not with him as much as we are. It's very occasionally that he goes there. But I sort of need to know, like, other than me trying to work on being calmer, which is a good thing for me to work on, like, I'm trying to, like, build a relationship with him. We got a trainer. I'm trying to, like, do, like, we do loose leash walking. I'm trying to do, like, some training with him so that we can, like, build a little bit of a bond. But I still, in the end, like, I don't want to handle him in case I'm going to handle him wrong and he's going to, you know, kind of go.
Yeah. Yeah, I think what you said is really important in this timeline and the relationship with the dog, that it's very situational. So that means it's not really, and I'm just taking information, but it's not really consistent with everybody. It's your reaction with him and towards him might escalate the situation, and or you might worry about it more. And so therefore, his reaction towards you might be more significant, more because he knows that he can get in your head, or he knows that.
When he went in, he did this to our grown son once. Now, was it a long situation or it was pretty quick? Sam came from behind to hug him. Again, he's just used to our old dog, and he was on his bed, and now we know, like, you don't do that. Was it just, like, once that he growled, or was it, like, a whole thing with Sam?
It wasn't a really long.
The worst ones have been with me.
It was a couple of seconds.
Yeah, the worst ones have been with me.
Yeah. So
the most insane.
Yeah, and I understand. And I think, like I said, just understanding that snarl, snap, growl, showing teeth thing is all what you're saying. It's kind of information. It's communication. And to the everyday person, it can be very scary. And, you know, even to this point where you're still like, I don't really know what to do. In the moment, it's, and even myself, I'm like, oh, never mind. Okay. But a lot of people, dog owners, will carry that, like, oh, what was that? Is this a, you know, does he hate me? Is he going to do it again? When is he going to do it again? And then it perpetuates.
I'm definitely.
Yeah. Yeah. And then it perpetuates into this kind of anxiety of like, oh, what's the dog going to do next? And so my recommendation, because it's not consistent, because if he's not really doing it with Mark that often or as intense, and if your daycare person can literally take him and do anything, that really shows that either his relationship with you is what's causing this to happen, or you're perceiving this information much differently than how other people are perceiving it. And so, and I know that that's your questions is like, what do we do? How should I act? How should I not act? So I think in general, kind of like Mark said, like, hey, I'm not really ever worried about this dog biting me. He's never bitten anybody. He's very vocal. He can be very intense, but he's very clear with his communication. He's very assertive, right? Some dogs will just walk away or they won't do anything and they just kind of take it. And he's more like confident, assertive, hey, growling, snapping. And that's just information. And oftentimes I think humans just think growl, snap, kill is the sequence. And really it's just growl, snap, that's it. It ends there. Mm-hmm. Again, like I posted a video of my shepherd correcting my puppy. I was on the phone. It was unexpected. And I said, hey, like that. And the puppy ran away crying and he didn't have a scratch on him. But it sounded like he has been, he got his rims ripped off, his limbs ripped off. So dogs can be very dramatic in both ends, you know, where they can be very aggressive when they're just kind of being fussy, and they can also, you know, be really dramatic when they feel like they've been killed and literally a dog just looked at them wrong. So I think my suggestion is from a professional standpoint is, look, like, your dog has never bitten anybody. And I think that when your dog reacts, it scares you. And I think the more situations you put yourself in to potentially be afraid or to, like, I guess I just don't see this, the relationship changing in a sense of, like, he's not going to stop. I don't think he's ever just going to stop being vocal and telling you off, like, hey, don't touch me, I don't want this. But I think if you practice how you handle the situation, his reaction towards you will get less intense. And I think your reaction to him will also get less intense because, you know, when he does it to you, you go right through the roof and you're like, ah, he's going to kill me. Where, like, maybe your dog, so a couple pieces of information is your doggy daycare person, this is a person that he probably and or maybe at some point did one little, like, hey, correction or something, and she was like, yeah, no big deal. And then after that, he may have never done it again because he's like, that doesn't get a reaction. Or she's just been so confident handling him that he's never felt like he's needed to take it. Because it's hard for me. Yeah, it's very hard for me to say because sometimes dogs take advantage of people. I've seen that many of times, almost daily, where dogs will take advantage of somebody so they know what they can get away with. They know what to do to get you away or freak you out. And then because it's not consistent. So if it's not consistent talking through the process, then you might have to shift gears a little bit on how you handle it. Because if you say, oh, if I take him and pet... Yeah, go ahead.
I was going to say, should we ever correct him or should we just accept that that's his communication? Like, I think she actually corrects him. I think it's all the alpha stuff is probably like total bullshit. So I don't want to like say something that you're going to be like, that's really stupid, but she's definitely like the boss of that house. Like, she's got a huge borzoi. She's usually has like 2-3 shepherds in there. She's got a lot of big dog energy and like, they're like, whoa, around her. And I think she verbally corrects them. Our trainer did not want me to do that. Our trainer was like, he's communicating with you. Don't punish him for communicating with you, or he might have to bite for you to get the message. So I don't know what your thought is about that.
I'm pretty neutral. Like, I think that it's a very discretionary thing. I think that there's definitely a time and a place to correct a dog, for sure. You know, physically with a leash or with your voice, you know, hey, knock it off. Like, you know, I just said it. I did it the other day at my shepherd. I was like, hey, and you know, I did dismantled the situation. But so I don't want you to think that here's what I'm envisioning in my head is he turns around and growls at you and then you just start yelling at him. And I don't think that's the right thing to do. I think you should go a little bit deeper into building a relationship on the leash, which will then yield to a safer, healthier correction from him. Because my point is I don't want to just say, yeah, correct him, because I just don't think, like, you would do that properly. I think you would just go too emotional with it. You would, like, dogs are very, they understand emotion. So, I mean, dogs can detect cancer. They know when you're nervous, right? So my point is you just have to be, I'm definitely a supporter in correcting a dog if they do something they're not supposed to. But when you're going into the situation and with too much emotion, it can make things worse where you kind of bite off more than you could chew. And now you're staring down the barrel of this dog and you're like, I didn't mean it. I don't know. So my suggestion for that is you want to build enough a relationship with the dog. Cause if you did it right now, it would be out of nowhere. He'd be like, what?
Yeah.
So I'd say yes. I think correcting him if it's an unfair correction to you, I think that it's a lot like parenting, like with kids, right? I think if you accidentally bump into him and he snarls and growls at you, I think that's a fair correction. But you just have to be set up successfully to do that, unless you're just going to scream at him, and that's not what you want to do. So there's
screaming. So go ahead.
Oh no. I was just going to furthermore on that. Just whenever you're asking yourself, like, is it something you should correct a dog for? Yes, that's the answer. Like, if you really have to think in your own head, like, if, you know, my puppy's jumping on my son who's a year and a half and trying to pull him on the ground, I'm correcting my puppy for that. Now, if my puppy goes and chews on the table, I may try to give him a bone instead. Like, there's things that you go, okay, this is a fair correction. Okay, this, you're a teething puppy, here's an alternative.
Yeah.
Using that reference, I would just say, if you spend more time with him on the leash and do some obedience, I think that you will, A, build a better relationship, so when you do correct him, he takes it well. And B, you'll warm your correction system up. Right now, if you've never punished him or corrected him, and I think if you just went out of the gate and did it, I think it would just be ineffective. I don't necessarily think it would make things worse, but I just think it would be like, I don't listen to you. So what I would recommend is do the leash training that you're starting to do. And a perfect example, let me walk you through an exact example that you can do. Is, let's say you did a threshold. So a threshold is you walk, you know, a door frame, for an example. It could be a car door, it could be any type of door frame, it could be a crate, whatever. So let's say you're going out the door and you worked on a stay or a wait, whatever. So you'd say stay to the dog. A lot of people don't ask their dogs to sit, greyhounds to sit, because of their posture.
Yeah, he doesn't sit.
Right. So you just do like a stay, right? So you go up to the door. And this could be for anything. You guys can apply this to anything. Whatever obedience that you have. Basically, when you tell him, hey, I want you to do this, okay? And you're going to use your leash, because that's a good form of communication. And you're going to test him a little bit. And let's say he breaks that stay, for an example, and starts to walk through the door. You're going to correct him with your leash. And all you do is just, and you just give him a little, just give him a little leash pop. And just say, nope. Because right now, if you went into corrective mode, it would be very out of character, I think, for your relationship. It just would be ineffective. But if you warm up with starting to hold him accountable for things and giving him a little bit of pressure for maybe busting through doors and things like that, A, again, great for your relationship, because he might look at you, like, again, thinking about your daycare person, like you said, like, yeah, she might correct him several times throughout the day. So he's like, all right, I can't get away with this. And he and that happens often. Like, dogs, especially like really pushy, working, kind of rough around the edges dogs, where they're just like, they're not going to take any crap from anybody. And so once you have a good relationship and it's stable enough for you to go, hey, knock it off. And the dog's like, okay, sorry, my bad. Because it's not realistic for us to say our dogs are never going to make mistakes. That's crazy. That burden shouldn't be put on anybody. Dogs make mistakes. It's the amount of mistakes that they make over time is what really you can look at a trained dog. And so I think that I would be starting with the leash, building that relationship in conjunction with starting to give him pressure for very basic stuff that isn't going to be overwhelming for either of you. And that way you can just start to feel the water, because I don't want you to go directly in to start correcting him, because I think he'll snap back, or you're going to be too nervous to do it. You'll get emotional. Your voice will raise. I think just giving him a little bit of leash pressure and just starting there is going to build your relationship. Oftentimes, you start doing things like this, for an example, in this context, and then you never see these big lash outs because the dog has more, let's call it, respect, or the dog is used to listening to you, or because you've held the dog accountable five times in training session, he's less likely to try to snap back at you. So I think that that's where I would be starting with the corrections, because I would agree, holding a dog accountable, making sure that you keep them in boundaries and structure, is definitely what keeps your relationship healthy, because you want your dog to respect you. You want your dog to fear you in some degree. Not fear you because you walk in the room, but fear you, like, when you say, hey, don't do this, you want them to go, oh, I don't want to get in trouble. Like, that's just a natural, healthy part of humans too. Like, when we see a cop, we slow down because we don't get in trouble, you know? So these are things that we want to instill in your relationship. And right now, if you don't have that, I think that you're really jumping off the deep end, where if you're not working on the very basics to build that relationship, and then you jump into, don't growl at me, you know, and you scream, and then it just makes it worse.
This country was built on a distinctly American work ethic, but today work is in trouble. We've outsourced most of our manufacturing to other countries, and with that, we sent away good jobs and diminished our capability to make things. American Giant is a clothing company that's pushing back against this tide. They make a variety of high-quality clothing and activewear, like sweatshirts, jeans, dresses, jackets, and so much more. All made right here in the USA, from growing the cotton and adding the final touches. So when you buy American Giant, you create jobs for seamsters, cutters, and factory workers in towns and cities across the United States. And it's about more than an income. Jobs bring pride, purpose. They stitch people together. If all that sounds good to you, visit American-Giant.com and get 20% off your first order when you use code STAPLE20 at checkout. That's 20% off your first order at American-Giant.com with promo code STAPLE20.
Does that make sense?
Yeah.
Okay. So that's where I would start with developing a relationship with the dog. And I think the more you, in general, just put the leash in your hand and work with him, he will start looking at you a little differently. And I would just say to you, your reaction when he does react, you have to just work on. And I know that that's hard, because that's like me saying, when you jump into ice cold water, don't breathe heavy. It's like, it's kind of inevitable. So I would just say, try to be as calm as you can. I think the more you work with him, the more confidence you'll build with him, the more of a feeling you'll build with him. So the more you can...
Well, we've done a little bit... It's interesting. We've done a little bit better in the last 2 weeks. We had a family emergency, which is why we had to reschedule with you. My husband had to go take care of some family, and then he had COVID. So I've literally been Sullivan's sole walker. We walk him 3 times a day. It was 55 walks in a row. I told my husband, but who's counting? But we have had 0 incidents or accidents during that time. None. Now, I do respect him on his bed. I have to say, like, he definitely has sleep aggression. So I will never again have an oopsie on his bed, you know, where I bump into him. But we had no incidents. So maybe it's good that I was just the only one taking care of him. And 24/7, he had to depend on me.
Yeah, that'll do it. I mean, that's a quick way to, you know, jump in the deep end, right? And I think that was my... Well, I know that was my next step for you guys, is just trying to set him up for success. I think, again, he's an edgy, retired racing dog. So his life is, in from my context of knowing the situation, is dramatically different. So I think there's all of that too, is like, he's not out there doing what he's supposed to be doing. So I think there's frustration. I think that there's a different lifestyle, different exercise schedule, different diet, different, everything is different. So I think that frustration is even more than what you would normally see. But one thing I would just keep in the back of your mind is, if he can behave a certain way with somebody else and he's not with you, that just means it's your relationship with the dog. Like, the context that you can, your doggy daycare person can do all these things. It's the same thing I do when people bring me a dog and they say, oh, my dog's pull on the leash, jumping, barking, out of control, and then in 5 minutes I have the dog walking with no leash. It's like, oh, okay, this is a you problem. And I know that you have recognized that, but I would just be pulling information from her as much as you could, because you might say, hey, you know, I see how good you are with them, and you're not afraid of them, you're not timid. Like, what are the things that you, like, I would try to get as granular as you can with her to just say, did you ever, like, correct him? What's your, like, if he does growl at you, like, how do you handle it? Things like that will be really healthy for you to know, because obviously it's like, and the way that I always look at behavioral problems is like an investigation. You're looking for consistencies and inconsistencies and trying to figure out what works. And it's like, if we have a dog that wants to bite everybody all the time, no matter what, I would say, okay, it's probably the dog, right? But if we have a dog that only exhibits and demonstrates certain behaviors with only certain people and not other people, it's very environmentally dependent. And so I would just be trying to take information from her too, and even just say, hey, can I just watch you work with them? Like, I don't understand. Your relationship with them is just much healthier and less stressed. And again, because you're so on edge, and I think working with the trainer that you are working with is going to be healthy, because I find that people who are nervous with dogs constantly send that message down the tube there on the leash. So just making sure, like, common mistakes that people make that I constantly have to try to correct is talking too much to the dog. So just constantly filling them with information. It's okay. We're going to go outside. We're going to go, because our nervous energy just kind of fills that void. And what ends up happening is the dog will start just kind of like the Charlie Brown teacher, you know, wah, wah, wah. They just start tuning you out, because you're putting so much information out there. Because dogs, like, there's a time and a place to say, hey man, missed you today. Were you a good boy? Versus just constantly talking to them and then asking them to do behaviors, sit down, stay, heel. So that's one big thing that dog owners will do, is we're out for a walk. The leash is your lifeline to your dog. So you want that nice and relaxed. The more that you have that tight, taut, or even at a degree at any angle, you're just telling the dog, like, you're hanging on tight, right? And then we're talking to the dog a lot. So personally, I would just go outside, take a deep breath, and just walk. And just try to frame it that he's with you, you're not with him. So try not to put all your energy into, like, what is he doing? Is he looking at me? Is he sniffing me? Is he going to bump into me? I would just put your shoulders straight, put your arm as calm as you possibly can down, and almost act like he's not there, and just walk. And then start changing directions. Just go 90, 120, changing directions in different ways, and simply just getting him to follow you. Because oftentimes, watching dog owners that are nervous with their dogs, for real reasons, but also not real reasons, of like, hey, he's growled at you 100 times, he's never put his teeth on you, so chances of him growling at you and hurting you are very little at this point. Mm-hmm. So we go out there, and we just kind of get, we have this nervous energy, and we get the leash, and we're pulling up on it, and we're like, okay, and we're going out, we're talking, and it just creates this, like, unnatural relationship with an animal. And the more that you just, hey man, are you coming? I'm going. We're gone. Like, the more you do that, I can't tell you how many times I've taken absolutely mess of a dog that's just anxious and whiny and pacey and spinny and all that. And I've just taken the leash and just walked. I didn't look at him. I didn't talk to him. I just walked, and I started changing, and the dog just starts following you around, and they're looking at you for the first time, and they're watching you. The owners are going, wow, my dog's looking at you. They never do that. It's because we're so used to, like, being on the defense of, like, oh, I don't want to make you mad. I don't want to. Like, are you okay? So I think that's be really healthy for you too, is just go out there. And truthfully, it might sound silly. I tell people too, if you are a nervous person, go out there without the dog and just pretend the dog's with you and see how you do. Just literally act like you pulled into Starbucks and you got in your car and you left your phone inside. Like, walk straight back in, like you know exactly where you're going. And that's how I tell people, just to go out there and, for the first time in your relationship, let the dog experience the idea that you know what you're doing and you know where you're going. And dog owners will ask me, like, how do I do that? And the way to do that is very simple. Just be assertive and confident. And the way that dogs will perceive that is just your intention, your body language. And again, that's cliche, but it's true. If you put your shoulder straight and you just walk, you don't run, you don't walk fast, you just confidently start walking, and you kind of use the leash as you were if you were fishing. You're kind of reeling it in, and the only time you're going to tug on that line is if you feel something on the other end. Other than that, you're just reeling it back in. And that's kind of what you're doing, is you're just walking. And if he starts to put his head down and sniff or whatever, you just keep walking. Does that make sense?
It does. We switched him at the suggestion of the trainer. We switched him to a martingale, and that's better. We had him in a harness, which was absolutely the wrong thing because he just put his chest into it. So he's now in a martingale, so he does get that tug if he hits the end of the leash. But, I mean, he's better, but he's still definitely walking me. I'm not walking him, so I need to really work on that.
Yeah.
He's definitely taking me. Like, he's a male dog. He'll pee 50,000 times on the walk, and he tells me, like, what trees we're going to instead of me telling him, like, where we're going.
It makes a lot of sense considering how he is with you. Like you said with Mark, he's like, Mark can do certain things with him, and he's like not as aggressive, not as vocal, not as, you know, all the things. And it makes sense because you got to think like, and again, like you said, the whole alpha thing is, the alpha to the dog owner is, in my opinion and experience, has been, I have to let my dog know that I'm bigger, tougher, stronger, louder than them. And that really isn't the case. There's some truth to, again, I just leadership, like Will, you guys find Will, like he always says, leadership is love.
He always talks about that.
Yeah, it's very important. I mean, there's reasons why top leaders in the industry talk about the same stuff. It's because we get the information in from thousands of dog owners all over the world, and we accumulate a couple messages that are very applicable that'll help a lot of people. And that's one of them. Just, you know, you're not going out there, because the way that I perceive alpha for most people is like yelling, screaming, just being, you know, beta, really. Just yelling, screaming, trying to overpower, when really, like an alpha, again, talking about like pack order in wolves, is the most quiet, calm, cool, and collective one. It's usually the oldest wolf that's the wisest. They make decisions. The other wolves look at that animal to, what are we doing? Are we reacting? Are we fighting back? Are we running? Are we retreating? That's, you know, the true term alpha is like that, right? And I've worked with wolves before personally, and I know how they interact with each other. And this is kind of the same thing with humans, is you want to be calm, cool, and collective. It's the same thing when you go into a situation with humans. Like, who do you want leading you? Do you want somebody that's yelling and screaming with their head cut off? You go over here. Da, da. Or do you want somebody that's like, hey, this is what we need to do? Do you want somebody that's assertive, clear, authoritative, and confident? So when you go out and he's like, hey, we're doing this, you're like, okay. So boom, right off the bat, he's already saying, this is how this is going to go. That's why I think it's more of like a sibling relationship that you have with him. I'm kind of picturing it, where he's bratty and he's pushy and he's like going to pound you if you, you know, get out of line with him. And he feels that that's okay for him to do. You know what I mean? So I would just urge you to start going out and rewiring that relationship. And that's why I said, I think putting him on the leash, rewiring things, readjusting, recalibrating things is going to be the healthiest thing for you guys, because of what information you told me. Hey, other people can do all the things I can't, perfectly fine. So that tells you that.
And so just concretely, so like that, there is going to be then pressure on the leash, and that's okay. Like if I turn right or I turn, do a 180, like I'm going to have to kind of bring him along with me. So the leash won't be loose for all of those turns, because I can imagine like he kind of puts his head into it.
Mm-hmm.
So is it okay to, I'm not going to haul on him, but can I just, he's just going to come along with me, right? Like the pressure on the leash, he just has to come with me.
Yeah. The answer is yes. You can give him pressure. So when you do directional changes, just try to do a verbal directional change. So the goal would be, like if you turned and went the other way, you can say heel or with me or let's go or whatever you want to say.
Or something.
Sure.
Yeah.
And eventually what'll happen, okay, so typically when you go out with a dog, we're kind of going in, we're shooting blind. Like they're not really engaged with you. They're not paying attention to you. They're not looking at you. You might as well just drop the leash, right? So we don't want that. Like we want an engaged dog. If I go the other way, I want my dog to go, hey, where are you going? Right? Like that's a healthy transactional relationship.
Yeah.
He probably wouldn't do that with you. So you want him to care. You want him to care. And right now he does not care. And that's a problem. And that's again, like looking at the symptoms, that's what we're looking at. Oh, my dog's growling. My dog has a short temper with me. My dog won't let me touch him. My dog. These are all symptoms of a relationship problem. It's not just the individual things. It's like, oh, my dog growls at me. Why? How do I fix that? It's like, well, why? You know, it's like, oh, I got a really stuffy nose. Like, that's a symptom of something. Let's find this. Let's find the reason and treat that, you know? So those are things that you should really take into consideration when you turn and go the other way. That's why I'm telling you to do these things, because the very first time you go out with your dog and you turn and go the other way and you say, hey, let's go, and just kind of tug on the leash, he's going to go, what the? And that's going to be different for you. And I would recommend doing that. You're taking the wheel. For a long time, your dog is in the driver's seat in your relationship. And you see it with, like, you see it with kids. You see it with management. Boss walks in, everybody changes like that. Everybody changes, right? Same thing with kids. If mom or dad, one or the other is having a hard time, and then mom or dad walks in and the kid goes, oh, I'm sorry. I don't want you. You're like, okay, principal's here. So that's your relationship, right? So right now, if you go out and he's running the roost, I think that's why he feels so comfortable by correcting you and putting you in your place. Because if there is a hierarchy in your house, let's say, you're at the bottom. And so he feels very comfortable putting you in your place. Again, talked about this earlier. My dog, my shepherd, Lakota, corrected my puppy because she's like, hey, get away from me. You're annoying me. And then I corrected my shepherd, and it just went boom, boom, boom like that. And it was over. Mm-hmm. Right now, if I stepped in and said, hey, shepherd, stop. We're not doing this. And she didn't listen. And she just, you know, grabbed the puppy and got real nasty. That'd be a problem. Like that's a problem. But in your case, it's very normal for a dog to go, they make mistakes. And your job is to step in and say, hey, it's inappropriate. And they go, okay, sorry, my bad. Like, we can't live in a world where dogs don't make mistakes, humans don't make mistakes. You just have to make sure that overall, when you say to do something, your dog does it. Now, if they don't do it every time, that's normal. That's life. Nobody's perfect, okay? Unless you're competing in the Olympics with your dog, you shouldn't be chasing perfection anyway. So I think for you, you should just be changing directions. I think you should be looking at building a better relationship with the dog with the leash and just start changing. Like right now, you go outside and your dog is so used to running the show. I think if you just started going, hey, we're going this way, it's immediately just going to say, whoa, this is a change of pace. Mm-hmm. This is a line change here.
On that, just leash walking with the dog, how do you strike a balance between showing them who's boss and letting them sniff or pee on a particular tree or whatever? Like,
yep. Yeah.
Sort of have to let them do some things, right?
Of course. Of course. That's a great question, Mark. So what I to answer your question, we typically have different cues or behaviors for these breaks. So in my training, I usually have a break command. So I'll have a heel and a break if I'm on leash walking with the dog. So if I say heel, the dog is to walk at my heels. That means, hey, we're going past other people or whatever. I want you right here. And the dog goes, okay, got it. And then when I say break, the dog can be a dog. And then they can sniff, pee, poop, run off. Doesn't matter. Like with my personal dog, if I walk her in my neighborhood, she's in front of me 200 feet the whole walk. If I see somebody, if I see a car, if I see a dog, I say heel. She runs, boop, right at my heels. I walk, we walk past, I say break, boom, she runs away. So the break.
So we're in the city and he's always on a leash. I mean, and he's a greyhound. We would never have him off leash. So the break might be he's on the leash, but we're not directing. He can go over to a tree and do his business.
The break command would be yes, it would be the dog out of the heel. So that was I was putting into context with my dog. Like my break is, it's very binary. She's either almost stepping on my heels, and then when I say break, she can run a town over if she wanted. So in your case, it would be 6-foot leash, 4-foot leash. You say heel, the dog is on a loose leash. You say break, the dog is sniffing trees.
Okay.
And you have to teach that though. Those are two individual behaviors.
Right.
So that's how you would you would do that. So yeah, it's a good question. But yeah, you would. But in the beginning, I wouldn't even be. I wouldn't even, the exercise that I was talking about, that little calibration, is more of just a. It's more of an ego check to the dog than it is obedience. That's like, hey, I'm going this way. You're coming with me.
Yeah.
So don't worry. So like, I would almost want you in head of the dog. Like, don't worry so much about the healing on that aspect. Mm-hmm. That's more of like, you know, breaking the dog. Like you would break a horse where they're like, I'm in charge. And you're like, well, I'm going that way. So see ya. Boom. They get hit with the leash. They have to go with you. So you just kind of like start teaching the dog that they have to follow you around. You want them to look at you. Because you have an unhealthy relationship right now. So you have to recalibrate things, because right now your dog's walking all over you. And again, we have to look at this situation from the from a macro perspective of, you're the human. Your job is to, or at least your goal, your objective, is to live a happy, healthy life with this dog, like you said, for another 6+ years potentially. So you need to, unless you want to live a life on eggshells the rest of your life, you need to really recalibrate them some things. And you can totally do it. I've done it so many times with dog owners. And the number one thing you have to do is just start taking the wheel in the relationship. And again, it's just really, figuratively speaking, doing that. You go out for a walk and the dog's like, oh, I've done this 100 times or in 2 weeks, 52 times or whatever. And the dog's like, here, we're going this way. And then you go that way. And you're like, nope, we're going that way. And the dog's going to go, what? And that's going to change. I mean, even that 1 second is going to change everything, because right now you're in such this mundane, oh yeah, sure, I'll follow you around. Oh, you want to pee? Oh, okay. And that's, there's, and again, when I talk about this generally, that's okay to do with your dog. It's just when you, you know, that's fine. But not every day. That's unhealthy. Mm-hmm. See what I'm saying? So there's a good point there in, if you have an unhealthy relationship with your dog, which is you do, you have to really kind of like mentally get to the gym here. Like, no, we're really out of touch here. We really need to work hard on this. And that's where you just start making changes every time you bring the dog out. And you'll see, in my opinion, you'll see a, you know, big change. The other thing that we didn't have too much time to talk about is the physical stimulation of the dog. So just obviously going from running that much, that long, that many years. That's the other thing. You guys could be bringing this dog to the track every day. I don't know. But that's the other thing that's going to be really helpful. If you can find a place, an off-leash place, or even the doggy daycare is helpful. Just to run this dog is going to be a quarter of the battle, just because he went from basically a super athlete, right? An Olympic athlete running all these things to living in a house. And that's like, it's really tough. It's like Michael Jordan then just working at Walmart or something. It's like, this is a culture shock. It's really difficult.
Yeah.
So that's the other thing I would just throw in there that I would say is the biggest things I would be doing in the next 2 weeks for you guys is just, again, we don't have to get into it or even talk about it, but auditing and asking yourself, how much exercise physically is the dog getting, and can we do more? Because that's huge, obviously, for this breed.
Yeah. It's really hard in the city, because we definitely will not take him to a dog park. There's just really negligent owners at a lot of the dog parks, and they bring treats and toys. So we do have a Greyhound play group, and we try to get in, but it's, to be honest, it's once a month. I mean, it's a over an hour drive, and it's not enough for him, but I mean, we can try to do that more. He really likes to be with the other Greyhounds.
Sure.
He runs somewhat, but they also just spend time together.
Yeah, that's healthy, super healthy, just kind of getting around like-minded individuals. The other thing I would recommend, if you haven't considered this as well, which is very, 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 very easy, but a little bit of expense, is a treadmill. Be really healthy for him. If you have a human treadmill, perfect. You can start tonight. They make dog treadmills, which are basically just narrow. You can fit them fairly easy. But that's the other thing too. Start them off small. But just think about it. You can come home from work or in between work or whatever you do and let them rip for 3 miles. Bam. So again, time, money. But you know, I have a board and train facility. I have a staff that go work with these dogs. And they'll put dogs on treadmills, you know, 15 minutes at a time and sit there and do emails. And the dog's just loving it. Once you get them conditioned to it, like we have a lot of dogs that will just run up to the treadmill and ask to start. Like they're like excited. So I understand living in the city and having capacities, and I agree with dog parks. I won't go there. But you just, again, if you were to say, Tom, what's everything we can do to make this life better with this dog? That would be probably the biggest thing that we didn't talk about in the time that we have is, I mean, that's huge for this dog, considering what this dog was doing and fulfillment too. So it's, the dog loved doing that. That's why it's, you know, I don't really have a dog in the race, if you will, no pun intended, but you know, when they banned Greyhound racing, there were a lot of people in the dog training community that were very saddened because they were like, well, that's literally the only reason why these dogs are bred is to race.
I know.
And if they don't race, they shouldn't even be around because now they're just, you know, they're not getting fulfilled, you know? So, but I'm sure with any type of racing, gambling, money, there's probably, just like with horse racing, right? There's probably unethical things going on, but you can't help that. So anyway, I would just say, look, retired Greyhound, 6 years of racing, now living in a home, kind of retired. But if you can just still put some miles on him every day, I think, you know, that same thing with people, right? You feel anxious, you feel depressed, you feel whatever. You go get on, I guarantee you, you go get on a treadmill for 2 miles and just sweat, you just feel better. You just do, 100%. You just do cardio, get your heart rate up. And so imagine that, but like times 10 for this dog, where he's like, that's all I know. I'm a super athlete, and now I'm just doing nothing compared to, so.
Yeah. Yeah. No, he definitely seems very bored.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, and that's a lot of frustration, so that's where that short temper is.
Yeah.
So you look at him wrong, and he's like, what'd you say? And you're like, oh, nothing. Geez, you have a bad day? And yeah, he's frustrated. Dogs who are frustrated redirect, and it's a very common thing when we see leash reactivity. Dogs are very frustrated. So they're sitting there on the leash and they're just, they got all this energy. And every day, day in and day out, they can't release it. And that's where dogs start to become leash reactive. And that's where dogs redirect. They turn and they lash out on the person next to them because they're just so frustrated. Physically and mentally, they're not getting fulfilled. So, and then again, just like keep shout, you know, keep looking for like lure courses and because there's all sorts of clubs out there that do really cool stuff. So.
Yeah, he did the lure coursing after he retired. The owners kept him, and he did lure coursing, and he loved it. He really enjoyed it.
Yeah, and I know they do, like clubs do it. Like you can go on Facebook and find like lure clubs, or even if you talk to your Greyhound group there, you might just say like, hey, does anybody know anybody in my area that does this? Because there are people who just have like, they'll just rent out the space, you know, $50 for the hour, and you can come run your dog on it, and that's incredible too. Like he'd be so happy, you know, especially if you brought him to do that, he'd be like, now you're making moves.
Yeah.
Cool.
Well, thank you so much. This is really helpful. I really appreciate your time.
You're welcome.
We've got some things to work on together.
Yeah. Yeah. You're welcome. It was nice to meet you and best of luck.
Okay. Thank you so much.
You're welcome, guys. Take care.
Okay. Take care.
Right.
Okay. Bye-bye. Bye.
All right, y'all, thank you so much for listening. The first question comes from 50 Recipes. Keeping it real, 5-star review. I started listening to Tom's podcast because we adopted a rescue dog who's been returned and taken away from 3 previous families. We went into adoption with eyes open, wide open, knowing that there were reactivity issues. Though we had other dogs in the past, it was clear, or rather to me, that we needed to become better dog owners to give my mini and Australian catalog mix a chance at our best life. Here's from what Tom taught me. Wow, this is just an amazing review. Thank you so much. I'm going to screenshot this and share it on my Instagram. This is amazing. Appreciate you so much. Cool. All right, let's get into the next one. Next one comes from Trish the Wheaton Mom. Licking Obsession, 5-star review. Absolutely love all your content. You're truly an amazing human and selfish, sharing your gift of God, dog language and behavior, an easy to understand term for us humans, not blessed with the innate gift, your innate gift. Specifically, I appreciate your understanding of knowledge, and you have completely useless to the recipients if you can't teach us how to apply it. Cool. So you sincerely care that your No Bad Dog Army succeeds by teaching us down to micro how to improve your relationships. Much love. Your will, you will enforce the most gifted educators common dog owners can gain realistically useful, loving, supportive, and practical knowledge even without leaving the homes. It's evident in all the content you unselfishly do, what you do for all the dogs, not for fame or fortune, but for pure love. Thank you. All right, so we have two male Wheaton Terriers. 7-year-old is obsessively licking the floors on a daily basis whenever he's walking around the house. For many years now, he's had a condition called pica. He eats any and all material during episodes. For the most part, I'm able to manage his condition through daily steroids, micromanagement, early detection, and the onset of episode. Is unable to say if it's pica causes him to constantly lick the floor, if he's high anxiety, or if it's a nervous tic. My question for you is it fair to correct him for his obsessive licking if I don't know what's causing him to constantly lick every square inch of my floor? And is it fair to correct him? And if it is fair to correct him, and you often say a correction should be accompanied by showing them the behavior you want to do them instead, but I don't know how to show him that. All right, so let me just answer this and simple this down. I would say yes if it's becoming a problem, which in this case is obviously probably a problem and unhealthy. I think it's, again, as you guys know when you're listening, like it's more subjective to each dog, more discretionary to each dog. Like when we're correcting a dog, like again, like even listening to this podcast, it's like the corrections are going to vary, right? So corrections for, you know, eating a piece of food that somebody dropped because they made a mistake is going to be different from a dog jumping and trying to tackle somebody. It's like, hey, oops, no, don't do that, versus like, oh no, definitely don't do that. So I think it's just important for you to, yes, you can correct the dog. It's just how you correct the dog. So I would be working personally if it were my dog and we're dealing with this and it's just becoming this very constant thing that's very annoying and unhealthy. E-collar would be probably my suggestion. So just every time the dog licks, we would work on leave it or no, and then pair it maybe with a vibration collar. Just to throw that out there. The other thing might be possibly and potentially working on maybe some medication if it is an anxiety thing. That's also something that you might be open to, where if you did medication, low dose to take the edge off and the tick or the nervousness stopped. I mean, that could be it, because it could be a nervous thing. So yeah, I would be correcting it. I wouldn't be correcting it like a leash correction or anything like that. It would be like a verbal correction, a noisemaker correction, or even an e-collar correction. And then I would also be very open, because what's the worst case scenario? You try it for a month, doesn't do anything. Okay, try something else. If it does something, oh wait, this might work. Those are the couple of things I would work on. Thank you so much for listening. Trish, on to the next one, Sunflower227. Hello, please, Husky, 5 stars. Hello, please, how do I let her go, get out more energy without running away from the juggle, the jealousy? We have a 7-year-old Husky, Nina, who I cannot teach recall. She bolts anytime she's outside. It's impossible to reel her in. All I want to do is let her sniff and run. I'm trying to teach her recall and stay, but I have 2 pugs who get jealous when I put them away to train Nina. The 3 of them end up fighting for attention. Nina is always on leash or in her kennel. Is it bad for her as a dog? Or is it making her want to... Yeah, I think that holding her back is going to make her want to run more. So if you watch my first episode with my puppy Burley, I let him off leash. I've let all my dogs off leash from a very early age. It helps them appreciate freedom more without like having to like hold them back. So I think like with kids, you give them more freedoms. They don't like that's, I mean, this is a little off topic, but that's why the United States has this is 2 years ago, but we have the highest problem of alcoholism in the world because we have the highest drinking limit age for drinking. I don't know how to say that, but yeah, it's 21. It's the highest in the whole world. And we also have the highest rate of alcoholism and alcoholics in the world. This is 2 years ago, so maybe it's changed, but still, we got to be in the top. So it's the same thing as like, you can't, you can't, you can't, you can't. And then when we tell them they can, they abuse it. So it's a lot like with dogs, is if you don't let them out. So A, you can do, you could definitely Sunflower Girl or Sunflower 227. You could definitely do off-leash work with your husky. You just have to do remote collar work. And I would also just be doing a long line. But I think I would be leaving your pugs out at home and getting this husky out. Huskies need so much exercise. If you do not give them exercise, they will sabotage you. It's not your husky being bad. It's not your husky misbehaving. It's your husky not getting enough fulfillment in order for them to be happy. And that's just like a parenting thing. So it's probably not the news you wanted to hear, but it's the news you needed to hear. So your dog is probably misbehaving and wanting to constantly run away because they're not getting enough physical exercise. Dogs who run away are not typically happy, period. People don't run away if they're happy. Dogs don't run away if they're happy. Your dog is not fulfilled, and he or she is telling you every day. So I'd be doing long line work like tonight. You could do it right now. Keep your pugs at home because they're not trained and they're causing chaos, and literally go outside and put your husky in a long line and let this dog run. That's the first step. Second step would be starting off-leash e-collar conditioning. All right. Next question comes from CLB963. If you guys can hear my son coming up the stairs, that's what that is. 5-star review. Love this podcast and all your materials. Keep up the excellent content. We rescued a 6-month Dalmatian from euthanasia. He's very bouncy and fearful of strangers. He's been hit a lot, and he smacks you with his feet and bounces your body. And but when you correct with a leash or pop, he wets and loud noise. Also, resource guarding and kennel, now hand feeding. How can I correct bad behavior without making it worse? Working on place when around strangers. Currently, he's hiding behind me. I would just say, I don't know what you're using. I would need to know what equipment you're using on the leash pop. If you're not using anything on the leash pop, I would say I would be probably using like a noisemaker or something, or even an e-collar. So just like I was saying before, these are things that aren't going to, they might correct the dog, but it's not a physical correction, which sometimes is a little bit easier for some dogs to take and consider, because you don't get in their own head, and that's not an emotional thing for them. So noisemaker. I think the e-collar vibration will probably be your best bet. It's going to be the least aversive thing. So yeah, that's what I would say. Okay. All right. Those are the three for this podcast episode. So if you're listening to this, leave your review in the iTunes review chart and I'll answer it next episode. Thank you for listening, guys. We'll talk to you later this week. Bye.
These days, work is in trouble. We've outsourced most of our manufacturing to other countries. And with that, we sent away good jobs and our capability to make things. American Giant is a clothing company that's pushing back against this tide. They make all kinds of high-quality clothing and activewear, like sweatshirts, jeans, dresses, jackets, and so much more, right here in the USA. So when you buy American Giant, you create jobs in towns and cities across the country. And jobs bring pride. Purpose. They stitch people together. If all that sounds good to you, visit American-Giant.com and get 20% off your first order when you use code STAPLE20 at checkout. That's 20% off your first order at American-Giant.com with promo code STAPLE20.